My name is Larry Norris. I'm the co-founder of Decriminalize Nature. I've been lucky enough to help people all across the U.S. pass policy. I think there's now about 29 cities or so, and quite a few that are on their way, passing policy to effectively decriminalize entheogenic or psychedelic plants and mushrooms all across the U.S. So it's been quite a journey over the last 6 years, and I look forward to talking with our guests today about some of the interviews that they've been doing across the U.S. as well. I'd also like to introduce Rachel, who's our behind-the-scenes maestro, so to speak, and she's going to be helping us with all the tech stuff, and also she'll be taking any questions. So if you have any questions out there live, please go ahead and put those in the chat box, and Rachel will ask us towards the end of the show anything that you are interested in asking our guests today. You know, we're going to be doing this every 2 weeks. So we have, you know, quite a few platforms that are out there right now. We're on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. We're doing this live on YouTube, and also Rumble and Odyssey. So check us out there. If you'd like to make a donation to help support this amazing movement and show, you can do that on the podcast platforms as well by clicking the donate button. I'm sure Normalized Psychedelics also has some donation options in the future as well. We'll talk about that. We're really excited to have our guests today. We've known them for quite some time. Really, I see this kind of been working hand in hand with them, with a lot of different sort of, you know, bringing education out to the community. And so today we have Jamie Blasquez and Artem Smirnov, and they're both good friends of ours and founders and creators of Normalized Psychedelics Project. And they're aiming to gather over 1,000 stories and testimonials from folks regarding the benefits and healing emerging from entheogenic and psychedelic practices. They also post 2 times a week on the Decriminalized Nature Instagram. So if you're on our Decrim Nature Instagram, check that out. We have some really great videos on there, little snippets, and they have their website and some other stuff on YouTube. We'll talk about that in a bit. Really excited. Also, Jamie runs Decriminalized Nature Flagstaff and also the Flagstaff Psychedelic Society. And on top of all that, also runs Decriminalized Nature Arizona as a team lead there. So a lot of things on your plate, Jamie. Thank you so much for all the incredible work you've been doing. And Artem's been helping out with the creative director of Normalized Psychedelics, and he's popping around and doing some great travels as well. So really excited to have you both here, and we're looking forward to the great conversation that we're going to have today. How are you doing today, Jamie and Artem?
Go ahead, you first.
Doing well, you know. Good start to my Sunday. Just took a walk in the park here in Mexico City. So beautiful day. What about you guys?
I'm doing really good. I mean, what better way to start a Sunday than talking about plant medicine and advocacy and education?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for both being here, and for taking some time out of your Sunday as well to share with the regular community here. Maybe we can start off with both of you. We'll start off with Jamie first, then we'll go to Artem. A little bit of a background bio, like how did you get interested in this area, and sort of what things would you like the audience to know about you?
Yeah, I was raised in a home where drugs were bad. If you smoked any cannabis, the next thing you were doing was heroin. And so all drugs were bad. And it wasn't until my early 20s that I got diagnosed with a pretty severe autoimmune disorder. And I ended up finding cannabis as the healing plant that helped me through my journey and really cured me of it. So, and then fast forward until late 2019, I was in a friend's kitchen. He was telling me that a friend of his was dating a guy that did a little bit of mushrooms every day. And my response to that was, ew, what a druggy loser. And he said, no. She said, it's supposed to be really good for you. And I said, oh my God, she's enabling this drug behavior. Like, she needs help too. And he said, no, she wants me to read this book called Michael Pollan, How to Change Your Mind. And I said, well, I want to read that book because I want to know what garbage she's putting in your head. And so I ordered the book on the spot. And as soon as it came in, I burned right through it. And when I hit the last page, I was just so angry because it triggered one of the deepest traumas of my life. And that was suicide stole one of the most important people in my life when I was 11 years old. And the trigger after reading this book was, had these framework and community around these medicines been in place, that person would still be here to be with me. And so in that moment, I dedicated my life to the education and advocacy of plant medicine to help those suffering and to help those in need. And so people don't have to die from suicide anymore, and people don't have to suffer alone, and that these can help us along.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jamie. What a journey to be where you are now. Really, truly, we talk about how folks are, you know, we can never change the minds of these people, and whether it's Megapollin or the movement or people that are friends or whatever, like once you realize, like, wow, this is all propaganda and misinformation that we've been fed over the years, you start to realize, like, wow, what else are we not knowing, and what else can we learn from these plants and mushrooms? I think that's what one of your sort of ideals of your project is going forward, is really sort of bringing those short stories to people so they can share that. Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Artem, how about you?
Totally. Well, I think there are a few layers of how I got started for psychedelics. They've been a part of my life probably since my mid, probably 23, 22. I actually accidentally dosed myself and one of my friends with a research chemical when I was 23. A guy told me that we're going to see some cool lights in the sky. And I was like, well, we're bored. Let's just, you know, we're shooting some hoops. Might be cooler if the lights in the sky are shooting around at the same time. And 1 hour later, we're both just like eyes completely open, walking around being like, oh my God, a whole portal has been opened into my mind. So that was an experience I had at 23. And I think that opened me up to the whole world of hallucinogens, of altered experiences. For me, like personally, they've helped me a lot with decision making. You know, if I'm having a decision that I need to make in my life and I'm struggling, like just doing some mushrooms and going into the forest with a friend, a trusted friend, has always been something that I've loved. And it's something that's always brought me a lot of value and a lot of, like, I don't know, just a lot of groundedness. And it's helped me connect to myself for a while. And it's helped me a lot with presence. I would say that and I think probably a lot of us are struggling with presence in our society, or just kids, you know, struggle to be present. But I would find myself daydreaming, and I'd find myself disassociating and kind of not feeling like I was in my body. And I think tuning myself in with psychedelics and those altered experiences, they've helped me become more present in my body. And yeah, that's been something that's really helped me with joy and happiness, just in my life in general. And I always tell people that growing up, I always felt like I was disconnected from the root of life, like the root of life. Like there was life happening, and then there was Artem operating like on the side, and I never felt connected to it. And I think that psychedelics have helped me bridge that gap. This project got started when I met Jamie, and I realized that a lot of people didn't have those early psychedelic experiences. And there was a lot of people who might could benefit from those. And me, I would, you know, I would occasionally tell my grandma about my mushroom trips just to mess with her. I'd be like, hey grandma, listen to what happened on my latest mushroom trip. But truthfully though, a lot of people would benefit from hearing those stories and those personal accounts. So as we started collecting these interviews, I realized how starved and hungry the people were for authentic human experiences that didn't feel promotional in any way. We're not trying to sell you anything, you know. That's why this project, Normalize Psychedelics, is a nonprofit, because we're creating a sort of database of human experiences. But the people were asking for it, and I was like, this sounds like a really beautiful thing to add to the world.
Awesome. Thank you, Artem. Yeah, and you know, you talk about and we're disconnected to our roots. As you probably know, that's a little nice little segue to the name of this podcast, which is Restoring Our Roots. You know, that was really been something that Decriminalized Nature, I think, has focused on since the beginning, is realizing that folks all over the world had this deep connection to plant medicine or mushroom medicine, what have you. Artem, your family is from Russia, I believe, right? So there's probably an ancient, you know, sort of tradition there that we don't even really hear about. It's just kind of this like thing that happens over there. But, you know, I know from my family's from Finland, and there's the same sort of thing. There's a lot of ancient mushroom traditions. And Jamie, you know, I'm sure probably with your ancestors as well. So this idea of restoring our roots to reconnect not only to our nature and to our consciousness, but also to our ancestors, I think is really powerful. And I think you're probably tapping into a lot of that in some of the interviews that you're doing. You're really seeing people sort of open up, at least from the interviews that I've seen, in a way that, you know, people don't really talk about. So for both of you, you know, however you want to kind of banter this back and forth, but the idea comes up, Normalize Psychedelics, you're ready to go. The idea, you know, okay, well, let's make this thing happen. You go on this big road trip. T- tell me about this road trip. That sounds super exciting. You know, you came here in Oakland, you had this RV and you were just going for it. So what was that process like? And what kinds of things did you see along the way?
Artem, can I do the background of how this all came to be?
You have to. Yeah, you
okay.
must.
So I had just moved into this apartment, not knowing how I'm going to pay for it. There's like crap everywhere. I'm stressed out. And I just came out of a morning meditation and I was like doing dishes at the sink. And I got this like vision out of nowhere. And it was like the shoestring, like the Italy on a shoestring look, but it was through the United States. And then I got a flash of that. I got a flash of the mushroom shop in Canada. And then I got a flash of Artem's face. And it's like, I knew what I had to do. Like we had to do this RV trip to capture what's going on in Decrim Nature and, you know, get the stories, because we all know that the revolution will not be televised. And so I was like, no, 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 this is too big. I don't know about that. And then by the next day I was like, all right. So I called Artem and I was like, Artem, look, this is what I saw. Like, let's get this thing going. Like, what do you think? And he was like, sure, Jamie, like, yeah, why don't you just sit on that for 2 weeks and then, you know, give me a call and then we'll go from there. And I was like, great. So then that's when I reached out to Larry. I was like, Larry, what do you think about this idea? Like renting an RV, going through all these cities, capturing all this stuff. And Larry was like, yep, let's get this going. We exchanged. I got a whole agenda going. I pretty much mapped out everything I saw in the vision. And I called Artem back 2 weeks and I'm like, Artem, I'm ready to go. Like, I'm ready to rent the RV. And he was like, holy crap, Jamie, I thought you were high. I didn't think you were serious. And I'm like, yeah, I'm serious. Are you in? And he's like, hold on, let me think about it for like a week. And then after like 4 days, or I don't know how long it was, he called me and he's like, let's do this. And I'm like, sweet, RV is rented. These are the dates. This is where we're going. Also, I showed him the agenda and I was like, this is nice and relaxing and doable, right? What do you think? And he was like, it's doable. And I was like, I missed the relaxing part that got lost on me, and that'll come up later in the story. And then that's really it. The day came, we took a month off and we hit the road. Artem, you wanna?
Yeah, you know, I would never ruin a friend's passion project. And for me, I was like, man, like Jamie is being called to speak to all these people about psychedelics. I love psychedelics. I would love to meet all these activists, because I wasn't familiar with any of these communities. And I was like, what a cool chance for me to meet all these people who are so passionate and, you know, changing, literally changing the laws of these towns, these cities, these areas. And I was like, for me, I was just like, this is going to be fun. And the initial idea for this project was to create a documentary about the Decrim movement, which hasn't really yet been done. And, you know, I think at some point that's a really beautiful story to share. I think maybe that'll happen. But anyway, yeah, like the trip was spontaneous. There was like 5,000 kilometers of, it was a really type A trip from Jamie. It was like very ambitious. It was starting in Flagstaff, driving all the way up the West Coast through California, through Oregon, through Washington, through Canada, back into Canada, through Colorado. It's a very ambitious trip, but it was really fun. We got to meet all of these people. So for me, I was honestly moved by how many of these people were this was their mission in life. And I was like, man, like this is no game. You know, this is no game. And for people to take that into their own hands and to actually do something about it and change laws, I was like, what a beautiful, you know, really what a beautiful thing to do. And I think I honestly got a lot more love for local politics, because prior to that, I've never considered myself political. I always thought that politicians were just kind of, you know, politicians. But seeing these local people operate and how many good things they're doing and how honest they were and how much they care, I was like, man, like there's a beautiful way to do politics as well.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add to that, like when we started, we were going to create a documentary for Decrim Nature. That was our intention, just to get the voices out there, because I didn't feel like it was being reported to the full extent of what really was happening in our communities. And 3 or 4 days into it, I turned to Artem and I was like, holy crap, like we can't wait for these stories to get out in a documentary. Like we need to get this out now. This is going to save people's lives. And he was like, yeah, I was going to talk to you about that. And it was like, should we kind of like put the documentary on the back burner and just figure out a way to get these stories out to like help people with their suffering now? And so that's when we were like started brainstorming this project. And that's kind of really how, that's why the Decrim Nature documentary has yet to be made, because it's like almost like we got taken in a different avenue to be like, get this out now. And one thing I want to add to this too, which was very dramatic dynamic of where people are at in this space, because we went to go see Dana Larson up in Canada, who is literally selling all psychedelics over the counter, and at the time wasn't decriminalized, wasn't legalized, and it was just very out in the open. And then from there, we went down to Montana to, we were supposed to meet with a couple who run ceremony, and we were literally an hour away from them. And she called, the woman called and was like, look, we can't do this. It's not safe. We have a child and we have to protect our family. And it was such a huge dynamic of how it could be like so in your face and then so hidden as well. And then from there, that was the long end of the journey. And we were driving and on and on and on. And I turned to Artem and I was like, who made this schedule? And how did you let this happen? And he was like, look, I said it could be done. I didn't say it was relaxing. But
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And, I mean, I think, you both speak to something there, which is like the beauty I enjoy from doing this work is like meeting all these people from all over the place. Like there's all these great minds and, all these people that activated, working in politics, local politics, like you said, is, so important, sharing their stories, having healing experiences, doing something that they're not getting paid for just to make change happen for the rest of their community. Like it's such a privilege to be able to like connect with these folks from all over the place and see these little pockets come up in all these different random places where all of a sudden there's a community of people that never knew each other before and they're connected and bonded by these plants and mushrooms and then they make something happen. And so I think, your sort of project of like going around and really sort of now getting some of those stories is so important, and I'd love for you guys to be fully funded so you could do this all over the US, and like talk to people everywhere because, the stories are going to be different in every place, Southern California, the Flagstaff, the Montana, as you said, the versus the Vancouver, people, it's still a D, that's, I think, from what I understand, the name of your organization too, Normalize Psychedelics. How do we it's really about destigmatizing, but you're taking the positive spin of that, right? How do we normalize this idea so it's not scary for folks? So it's not something that they have to hear, all the sort of many, many, many over 50, 60 years of sort of rhetoric around this this topic and really be able to come from a fresh place and say, hey, this works for folks and this is helping heal folks. And I found that in my community these things have happened because of the positive benefits and potentials of these medicines. So I think that's for me has been also really something that's been so amazing is people all over the world really at this point in time calling up. We've now created this beacon, you've all created this beacon too, so I'm sure you get a lot of stories that come rolling in from places that you wouldn't expect. And realizing like this underground is just, it's overused, but this idea of mycelium network is so true. There's so many spots and pockets that you just it's covered up by all this other stuff, and then you see there's this really vibrant community happening underneath all of that. As you sort of went through your sort of West Coast travels, and now you've kind of done some conference interviews and all this type of thing, what at least in your first little sort of run there, what were some things that really stood out for you? That was like, either you didn't know before, or that was a really powerful story that you were like, wow, or I know Jimmy, you often talk about Port Townsend as being this sort of unique little mecca there. What are some spots? Obviously we have the store in Vancouver. What are some spots for you that really excited you as you sort of went through and some stories that you heard that were like, wow, I can't believe this?
I'll start. And I'm glad you brought up Port Townsend because it is a little gem. But like, and I'm so glad you're talking about communities, because the beauty and the warmth and like the cohesiveness of the communities really took us aback. And just how like inviting they were and just how genuine they are. And I think Port Townsend of all of them was like the pinnacle, because I feel like psychedelics have already been integrated in the fabric of their community, because a bunch of hippies escaped up there and kind of started their own thing. So it's already integrated in the community. And I remember one of the big things was Artem and I went to dinner up there with a group of people. And I looked around the restaurant and everybody was like genuinely happy and joyous to be together and very engaged. And I turned to Artem, I'm like, holy crap, like everybody's happy here, like genuinely. And he's like, I know, it's freaking me out. But it was like, it's so beautiful up there. And it was so beautiful and so warm that we're in the RV getting ready to leave. And I'm just kind of waiting for Artem to hit the gas. And I'm like, are we going? And he's just like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to go. Like, it's just so beautiful. And I think that was one of the big things that stuck out for me, was just such a community. And as you know, I'm learning and navigating this space, it's like, psychedelics are just the catalyst. They're just the door opener. It's community and integration that are like the pillars of all this, and really the community. And I feel like that's one of the biggest things of suffering in our society today, is like the lack of community. Like, we're so isolated within our homes and in our phones, and psychedelics really bring community together. So that was one of the biggest things that stood out for me.
Awesome. Thank you, Jamie. How about you, Artem?
Yeah. From that first run, places that we went to that I remember were Los Angeles. You know, Santa Cruz was also really cool. We didn't spend that much time in Santa Cruz. I've always wanted to come back, but that place was super psychedelic, and everyone was just so open about it in Santa Cruz. Bay Area is Bay Area. For me, I think also Port Townsend had a really big, it made an impact on me, based on how normalized it was. And then we went to Denver, and we went to Boulder. In terms of the states, those are kind of the hot spots. But you said something earlier about, you know, wherever you go, the stories are different, and people want to share different stories. They are, but they're also really, really remarkably similar. They seem to follow this really similar. There's like different archetypes that these stories, with psychedelics seem to follow. And it's not really about psychedelics. I always make this joke that I was like, a lot of these stories almost sound like a meeting Jesus story. It's like you're finding yourself. And if you replace psychedelics with Jesus, it's going to be a very similar story, which is funny, because we're all on this like trajectory of life. We're all going to find these, we're going to be in these crossroads where we're growing, we're transforming, we're going to lose, you know, family members, you know, it's going to be painful, it's going to suck. And then how do we go through these things together? And kind of like Jamie said, a lot of the stories are about going through challenging times together. And then a lot of the stories, that it seems like the psychedelics open up this wound that's inside of us. We already have this wound, and we're alone before the psychedelics, but we realize how freaking alone we are after the psychedelics. But we can no longer wait. Like, afterwards, we're like, oh man, this is not something that I can put aside anymore. This is something that I have to take action on tomorrow. Whereas going through life, we can be that aside, be like, oh, whatever, I'm lonely, whatever, it's not bad, I'll just go to work and pretend everything's fine. But we're not able to pretend so much anymore after we have those experiences, and we realize how big that wound is. And then we actually take action. So yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And you mentioned there archetypes. And I think that's such an interesting idea, because, you know, I make the same joke similarly, which is like, yes, there's a lot of people out there, but like, it's kind of surprising, at least from the rhetoric of like, and you know, the stories in the community are similar. There's differences there, but the rhetoric of like, you know, politicians who are drawing from this 50, 60 plus year, you know, misinformation campaign, it's always kind of the same. You hear the same exact questions, no matter if they're, you know, Northern Maine, Michigan, Florida, Oklahoma, Arizona, you know, Arkansas, or wherever, you know, West Coast even, you know, so those same kind of things come up. So it's kind of like the Agent Smith from Matrix, right? As soon as you start to like push against the Matrix, then all of a sudden like the algorithm pops up and says, oh, da 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 da, and you're like, oh, I've heard this one over this way, and this is how I described it. And usually the same responses will help that person sort of ease some of their concerns or their fears. But in general, I think there are these stories, archetypal stories that you hear come up, and these even archetypal personalities. You know, Jung talked a lot about there's archetype of transformation and there's an archetype of personality, and there's sort of the personality is one thing, and maybe there's certain personalities that are more drawn to psychedelics, but there's also this archetype of transformation, this idea of a death and rebirth experience or what have you. What types of archetypes did you see? You know, if you have this, you know, in terms of a qualitative research project, you have an amazing qualitative research project there. If you did like a thematic analysis of all your stories, you come up with something publishable, you know. I don't know if that's ever on your mind at all, but that's something to think about. But thematically, what are you seeing in terms of the most powerful stories? Also, what are the ones that are sort of common? I know you still talk about this wound, but maybe you can be a little bit more specific about that.
Sure. Well, Jamie, maybe you can talk a little bit about the veterans, because Jamie's talked to a lot of the veterans, and maybe you can talk about some of the patterns that you found in these veteran stories. I think that would be interesting. And then,
Yeah. So one of the things that was surprising, because I'm a civilian, I've never been in the military, I've never been part, no one in the my family's in the military at all. So I'm a civilian. So coming into this world was like really eye-opening, because I, going into this world, had the impression that, you know, the military causes PTSD, and that's where this is all coming from. And what I'm coming to find is a lot of the people in the military are coming in with trauma that's even more compounded in the military, and then even more compounded when they leave. And that was one of the biggest eye-opening to me, was like, it's very traumatic for them to leave the military and go back into civilian life. And so that was one of the biggest things with coming into that space and learning about how psychedelics help them learn before, during, and after. Is that kind of what you're thinking, Artem?
I wanted to add something on. I think every one of those stories, almost every one of them, at some point, the veteran was suicidal.
Oh yeah.
Like, that
Oh, we're
seems to
on the pill, death cocktail, the pills, all the things.
they're on the death cocktail, but at some point, like, they didn't want to live, and exploring what that means. Why didn't they want to live? Like, and I mean, the archetype of people being suicidal and not wanting to be in this world is really, 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 really common. It's a lot more common than we think. Like, people just, they seem like they don't fit in. They seem like they don't have a purpose. They don't seem like they matter. And then this archetype of, well, what's the point of my existence even on this earth? And something about the psychedelics is that they seem to, instead of thinking along those lines, they seem to connect them to the small things that you can fall in love with, the family, like the people that you have in your life. Something happens to where you start to see the root of life and the beauty of life. And why is it? How is it that in this, like, such a prosperous country that we have, that people, like, so many people don't feel like they fit in. They don't want to be a part of it. They're like, I'm checking out. They're passively checking out, and they're like, I don't want to be a part of this. So the suicidal arc is really, really, really common. Another one that, and
Let me just before we jump off that, let me
go
just go back to Jamie real quick.
ahead, man.
In terms of, I know that this arc is obviously one thing that comes up a lot, and then also, you're having to do some of this interviewing actually out of the country, and I think maybe you can just even talk about that. Is there frustration with veterans that they fought for this country and now they can't even be here having these experiences here? They have to go somewhere else to do it.
Yeah, there's definitely a frustration for that, but the beautiful thing is, like, there's a brotherhood and there's a big community out there that are working to connect them with the help that they need. There, in specific, there is a nonprofit called Music with a Purpose. Their four pillars are community, music, veterans, and humanitarianism. And they throw fundraisers to raise money to send veterans down to Mexico. And it is veteran ran, and there's a large push for that. But they are frustrated. Like, why is it that those who fought for our country and sacrificed for our country can't heal within our country? And that's definitely a big frustration. And it's also a big frustration how they're taken care of as well, because one, they have this foundational understanding of, like, of this mental toughness, like, there's nothing wrong with you, you keep moving forward, like, you're not weak. And so if they finally come to the space where it's like, oh my God, I need help, like, there's a lot of this going on, there's not true help there. They just put them on this, and that's what I call the death pill cocktail. It's like antidepressants, steroids, anti-inflammatories, and, like, all these things, and then they mitigate the problems that come out of it. It's just they do more medication to address those symptoms, and more, and then they're just mouthfuls of, and then they're numb, and then that's when the suicide is happening and the big depression. And so there is definitely, like, a big frustration out there among the vets wanting more, deserving more. I mean, they fought for our country, they gave it all, their families, they sacrificed everything. Like, we should be doing more for these men and women who fight and serve.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate that. Yeah, Artem, didn't mean to cut you off there as well, but yeah, it sounds like this is, this is one archetype here, and you have sort of the mini archetypes within that. But I think, you're tapping into something again, why decriminalization is so important, because even the clinical model, the VA is so far away from being ready for this, and people are going, to places, and they're trying things that, aren't synthetic. They're often nature-based. Oftentimes it's something like ayahuasca, which is going to take a really long time for the FDA even get anywhere close to that. Maybe we get synthetic psilocybin in the next 10 years, maybe, who knows? But yet we're seeing these results, and people are coming back with this sort of light that they maybe didn't have before. So, yeah, go ahead.
And I just want to add something to that too. Like when people start their journeys with psychedelics, whether it be veteran or whoever, and it's like they start microdosing, great. They start with ketamine, that's great. But I always say your end goal always, always, always is ceremony. There's something about plant medicine with a shaman or a facilitator in community that the Western model can't touch. And I think that's the important of decrim nature too, is we can't wait for the Western model to be legalized and have it covered by insurance. I know everyone's hoping for that. And it's like, how are we paying for this? How are we doing this? These are all on Schedule One still. Like it's a very long time away, and people are dying every day. And that's the beautiful thing about the decrim nature model, is it's a community and it's together. And there's, I don't know, and you could disagree with me earlier, I don't know how you feel about this, but there's something about plant medicine in community with a leader that nothing the Western model offers that can touch that amount of healing. It is so big and so powerful that, I mean, it's just always the end goal, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, no disagreement there. I mean, obviously there's something to be said for all the different ways that people can engage in these experiences, but I think ceremonially, especially if you tap into some, ancient practices or whatever, there's reason those are, technologies. We think of technology today as sort of silicon based, and it's in our computer, and this is and all that kind of stuff. But how you certain songs that are sung, the igatos, for example, and ayahuasca ceremonies, those are technologies. They're taking you to a place. That's what it's traditionally understood as. It's like it's a train you ride on, almost, if you will. It goes to a dimension, if you want to think of it that way, right? So all these different technologies, how the brew's made, with mushrooms, same sort of thing. Technology, one technology, for example, the Mazatec, they add honey and cocoa beans with the mushrooms. Well, that creates sort of this MAOI effect, like an ayahuasca ceremony, right? We have this, and you're also like, it helps with the sort of the clearing of the mouth and the flavor, but also that the MAOI and the cocoa beans or the chocolate beans, right, will create and sort of modulate some of the mushroom experience. So I think there's all these technologies that are also not easy to put into an FDA study because it complexifies things. They just want the pure synthetic form, do, and not seeing that there's like this whole conversation. And you probably all heard about the Maria Sabina, and they brought this the Indocybin from Sandoz Laboratory, and they brought it to Maria Sabina and her space in Mexico, and was like, oh well, and pharmaceutical companies always say, oh well, Maria Sabina said it's exactly the same thing, or this also has spirit, and they didn't incorporate in the fact that she's in her same set and setting where she's had hundreds of thousands of other mushroom experiences. And so when we're talking about opening portals, like what's really happening there, right? Would she have had the same thought if she went to Sandoz Laboratory versus in the space where she's created all this technology, if you will, around these experiences? So yeah, I think ceremony is such a big important part of this. I'm also thinking, obviously a lot of people have, don't have the access to doing that necessarily, but I think, if we're talking about really deep healing, I think that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's, oh, sorry.
Well, I was going to add on to that. Like, I think that one of the beautiful things about ceremony is how they can create a space that's so beautiful, and how important the space is. Because sometimes we're like, oh, it's just about the substance. I'll do it in a dark room by myself. That's cool. Like, but when you see somebody put so much intention in creating this beautiful space with everywhere you look, there's just beauty, and then there's all this tradition, and there's ritual, and there's music, and then there's beautiful music. You're like, man, I can't create this. Like being here is so special, and it's going to change. Just being here is going to change me, whether I even take the medicine or not, right? And it's like,
A little confounding variable there for you, like this, that alone will help, right? Yeah.
yeah. And what is that? Like, what is that variable? Like, this beauty, being around beauty is healing too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know, Jamie, do you want you had an extra to
I
add
was
there?
just going to add about set and setting. Like we're all very focused on set and setting, and it's like where we're at in our mind and are we safe in the setting? But it's so much more than that. Like doing plant medicine with a sacred people on sacred land, it's like there's no touching that. No touch. It's not just set and setting, like, am I safe in my, you know, in my space? And then do I know where I'm at in my head? Do I have good thoughts? It's like, no, once you're with the shaman that's deeply spiritual, deeply connected to everything around us, that has had a lineage of these practices on their sacred ground, there's no touching that. No medicine can touch that. Nothing.
And I think you know, there's set, sort of, that's the personal, you know, sort of environment, if you will. The setting is sort of the physical environment. There's this idea that Betty Eisner came up with in, like, the, I think, early, late 80s, early 90s, called the matrix, which is the cultural societal environment. But you're actually, you know, adding a fourth point to that, which is the spiritual setting of the space, the sacredness of the plants, the mushrooms, the sacredness of the energy that is in that space, almost like a professor that talked about terra psychology, psychology of the earth. The earth draws the people that want to represent its archetype, that represents its sort of, you know, what it wants to feel as a place. So I know that there's a story of an ayahuascaro who was down in Peru, and he went up to Vancouver, and he's like, this is totally different for me. I've never met these water spirits before that are here. You know, this is like a different land, therefore a different space, and therefore a different conversation that's happening. And that's not the medicine. That's not the set and setting. That's not the matrix. That's something that's unique to each individual space, like the sacred spaces you're speaking about. So I think there's definitely an addition that can be had to that conversation around set and setting, including the sort of spiritual setting or sacredness of the beings that are there, if you want to go into that animistic sort of perspective. Yeah, Artem.
Totally. And I think the sacredness in itself is healing. Like, I think that when we feel depressed or we feel really low, we feel like we don't matter. Like, being around sacredness is inherently healing. Like, being around a place that's important, that's beautiful, and seeing that, I think that does something to us that's hard to explain. But that's why a lot of these conditions that we have in the West, they don't really exist in a culture, in other cultures that have more of that sacredness. I don't know. That's one thought.
Right. I think the Rupert Sheldrake talks about is sort of like I think he used the term morphogenetic field, where you can, like, go into a field where other people have healed or other people have found it sacred, or sort of this building that there. It's not, you know, yes, it's all of that as well, but I guess there's a fifth part then, which is like, how many people have gone there and healed, and what does that embed in the ether, if you wanted to sort of take the Sheldrake point of view on that. So important to be doing this. And now we're creating these new sacred spaces all over the place. Yes, there's sort of these traditional sacred spaces, but now I think anyone coming together, you know, now we have, you know, 29 sacred spaces in terms of places that have decriminalized, that people are more actively engaging with these experiences. And funny, even recently, I think a CNN article came out, and you know, it's like the spin is always funny, right? You said earlier, Jamie, the revolution will not be televised. Originally, CNN was saying positive things about us. Now they're kind of like, you know, dissing a little bit. So I'm like, all right, we're back on the right track again, right? We're doing good things. But they said something like, unsupervised use of mushrooms has increased blah 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 amount since 2019. And I was like, hey, that's great, you know, because they're thinking of this sort of clinical model. But like, now there's these communities that are building and people coming together. And I think that's, you know, so important. And, you know, I think the RAND report talked about 8 million people, you know, having an experience in 2023. I'm sure that's increased quite dramatically since then. But you know, it's a process of relearning culture for a lot of folks too. They might not have access to go to these other places, and, you know, maybe it's going to be tricky for them. Maybe there's going to be some bumps as we move forward, as with anything, as you learn something new again. But sort of reestablishing this as spaces where people can feel comfortable doing this, I think is really critical. You know? We did a great little sidetrack around. You all did a me, and let's bring it back to archetypes for a second, because I know, Artem, you had some other ideas around archetypes, but I just want to kind of bring that back into the conversation. We kind of sort of talked about sort of environmental or space archetypes, right? And then there's the transformative archetypes, and I'm loving how this is all developing in these sort of, you know, what is it called, the nested inside of one or the other. What other types of archetypes are you seeing in your research and in your sort of you know, interviews that you're doing? I know you're down there in Mexico as well, so you probably see a lot of people coming down there and having experiences. What sort of you know, showing itself for you?
I think another archetype is just health. Like, what does good health look like? And how, for me, this is deeply meaningful, but how do these things help us connect with good health? Like, how does something like taking mushrooms help us? Like, we've had people say that taking mushrooms have helped them lose weight. And on the surface, that doesn't really make sense, you know, to somebody who's like, what? what are the scientific studies for that? Well, it's like, how does somebody take mushrooms? And but then when, once you start thinking about it, you're like, okay, well, I've taken the mushrooms and I'm sensitive to my body. And I don't want to like make my body suffer. And then that helps you get into better health, whether it's with, you know, we've heard people with chronic illnesses say that it's helped them with multiple sclerosis, with, you know, with losing weight and stuff like that. And losing weight is something, that obviously there's a lot of people trying to do that, but you know, how do these things help people tap into their own unique healing capacity and help them get into better health? For me personally, I'm deeply curious about this because I've had some skin issues throughout my life, probably since my mid-20s. And I've never been satisfied with the like the Western clinicians who are like, hey, just put some cortisol on your skin and you're fine. Don't think about it too much. Just move on through life. And I'm like, no, why am I having skin issues to begin with? And like understanding some of the more psychosomatic reasons why, like why my body is manifesting things as skin issues. For me, like those stories of connecting to your own body and improving your physical health are really meaningful. And I think they're really cool because I think it can go much deeper. I think we're only starting to scratch the surface on how these things are helping our physical health.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and obviously you spoke a little bit about, we got mental health, we got physical health. How often do like ideas around spiritual health come up? You know, are people seeing, what is that like for folks? Are they talking about spaces beyond and consciousness? Do they kind of keep it more sort of focused for the interviews? Or are you hearing about these unusual places that people go, the strange and unusual that can happen with these experiences? And how are people, do you kind of feel that when they talk about this when in the interviews? And maybe if you want, you want to tap into your own experiences, if you all have had some similar type stuff.
Jamie, you want to start or you want?
I'm just going to add a small thing really quick, because that's a really deep one, Larry. But what I want to add is, like, throughout these, all these archetypes, there's a kind of common recurrence, and I don't want to say for everybody, for a lot of people. And it's the reoccurrence of not enoughness. Like, I'm not enough for this, or the, you know, not worthy or not enoughness. Like, that is like a common theme in the human experience. But as far as like these bigger things that you're talking of, I don't think we've captured that. Have we, Artem?
Well, you know, I was going to flip that a little bit on its head. And I was going to say that sounds like a lot of the addiction stories. I feel like the addiction stories are actually the spiritual, like the spiritual health. It's like people don't feel spiritually there, which is why they're not living in a balanced way. I feel like the addiction stories, and specifically are usually a connection of spirit and a connection of connecting to the highest version of yourself, to something greater than you. I feel like those stories, they share that kind of archetype. And we had one dude who said that we interviewed on the first trip, and he said that he was having all sorts of issues with addiction, and he was just really abusing himself quite badly. I'm not going to say the name of this person, and you guys can see the interview on the on our website if you're curious. But he was talking about how he was super addicted to pain pills, and he was like, I just felt like this is the moment that I need to change. And I'm not advocating this as good practice for anybody, but he just started doing a lot of DMT and he just did DMT repeatedly for a while. And, you know, it seems like he was doing it in kind of a dusty room, but, you know, he just felt like he needed to change. And he said that he literally watched his addiction leave his body. And I was like, what is that? If that's not a, like some sort of, man, what a mystical moment that must have been. And that's some sort of spiritual connection that he was looking for, and he was seeking it. He was looking for him. And I think post that experience, he still had the withdrawals from the opiates, but he was able to detox and stop abusing himself. So for me, the addiction stories always feel like the spiritual realm and going into the mystical and seeing all these things. And those seem to be things that help people on that level.
Great, thank you. Jamie, you have any thoughts on that? No? Have you, I mean, what, you know, that's to me what's you know, the research that I did previous Decrim Nature stuff was all really about this sort of mystical, spiritual, sacred, unusual archetypes, transformation experiences that people are having. And I was always amazed at, like, you know, how profound consciousness is beyond. Have you either even in your personal experiences sort of tapped into that? What do you think the space is that we go to that's beyond here? Is it just a neurochemical interaction? Like, or is there a realm there? Are they just archetypes? Are archetypes realms because that actually exists somewhere? Like, what's in terms of, you know, either personal or, you know, if you want to take a step aside and be arm's length from personal experiences, what you heard a friend say, someone who isn't me, this used to say on the old interwebs, right? Swim, someone who isn't me said blah, blah, blah. So what's your thoughts on sort of the realms of consciousness and that we can tap into with these experiences?
I don't know, man. You're the PhD, Larry. I feel like I'll leave this to the professionals.
No, oh, no. I mean, everyone that has a personal experience is a PhD. Yeah. Anyway. I think that's what's beautiful about this is, like, it really, you know, it sort of democratizes consciousness, if you will. It doesn't matter what degrees you have or how much you studied it. The person who's had an experience is always going to have a deeper insight into this than, you know, a scientist doing, you know, clinical research studies that have never had an experience, which I think is an interesting dynamic too.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to be this experience where we go into the collective, like we move into the, we're like this, we become more of this one organism. Like we're living in this world and we move into this realm where we feel each other so deeply, where we might feel isolated and really independent in regular life. We move into this realm where we feel the collective so strongly, the like this realm of the collective subconscious. It's almost like we're feeling, it's like the internet. Like the internet is almost a representation, or the mycelium network. The internet is, it can be so beautiful. It's like this mycelium network of all of our thoughts and ideas. And I feel like we go into something like that, where we realize that something like a small action that maybe I think is not meaningful, like this, just talking to it, like talking to a stranger in this city, you might be like, I don't give a crap. Like, I don't know this guy. And then, you know, you take mushrooms and you're like, this is the most important thing I can do all day is talk to this dude. Like it flips it on its head, where you feel the collective so strongly and you realize that we're so connected. And whereas maybe your busyness will be like, hey, I'm too busy to talk to this guy. This isn't important. I have money to make, whatever. I got to pay my bills. I got debt. You know, this dude's not going to help me pay my debt. But you have this experience and you feel the collective so strongly. It's almost like it becomes so important. I don't know if that answers your question, but I feel like we go into this, like, we feel the collective so strongly and we're not able to ignore it.
Yeah, this is one of those trick questions because there's no answer, right? So yeah, anything that you think about it is just, I think, an addition to what we're all trying to think about, you know, and especially yeah. I think about integration this way too. It's like, we're all hearing what someone else's version of consciousness is. What does that look like to you? You know, what's going on out there? How does this connect, you know, and what can we learn from each other as we share this type of thing? Jimmy, what are your thoughts on that?
I think personally, Bufo has been 5-MeO-DMT, which is the natural form of it through the Bufo Alvarius toad, has been the most profound experience of my life. For the long time in this space, it was like psychedelics are not for everybody. And I walked that line. Like, psychedelics are not for everybody. They're not for me. I will advocate. I will create framework. I will educate. They're important, but they're just not for me. And I would kind of work through with like breath work and cold water and meditation. And psychedelics bring you to a whole new level of that feeling of interconnectedness. And so back to Bufo, the best way that I could the ineffable journeys of Bufo is like you are traveling through light as a conscious being talking to another conscious being telepathically through like visions and hearing, and really integrating your trauma and understanding your trauma and the reasons why, while being engulfed in unconditional love. And I thought I knew what unconditional love was. You know, I have very loving parents and an incredibly loving Catholic Italian family. I have a great tribe of friends that love me deeply, but there's nothing like the feeling of pure unconditional love of the universe. It's like God, spirit, source, whatever you call it. It's that like pure love. And that feeling is like the feeling of interconnectedness and how we are all deeply interconnected. And like Artem said, like before, I'd be like, I'm not going to listen to this guy. Like I got stuff to do. But after understanding like this universal truth of like how deeply connected, like that's my brother. Like, why would I not listen to my brother? Why would I not connect and spend time and try to understand this person on a deep level? I always have time for that. And so I think that's the best way I could describe these realms of understanding.
Yeah, these ideas of unconditional love, these sort of abstract ideas that feel so powerful, they're so real. And even this idea that's more real than real space. Like, why are we having this thing? Like, of all the, you know, that people say, oh, well, this is a, you know, these are plants' ways and frogs' ways of protecting themselves from blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, why that? You know, so we don't, you know, what's going on? Why unconditional love comes so powerfully and in ways we can feel it. And it's something that, you know, until you've had that experience, it's almost kind of like, wow, I didn't even know. You know, it's like they say, what you know, what you don't know. And then the things that you don't know that you don't even know, right? So, so I think these unconditional loves and sort of this idea of this sort of, you know, realness, this familiarity, you know, I'm sure probably, I don't know, for you, Jamie, or Artem, but for myself, you know, included, like there's this sense of familiar, like I've been here before. Like this place is familiar. Like, why is it so familiar? It's not like, oh, I had an experience where I was watching TV on my couch all evening, you know, that didn't happen. It was like this above and beyond, and I'm tapping into these ideas and these frameworks that, you know, were totally, totally new and fresh to me. So yeah, I think that's really beautiful. This idea of unconditional love. And of course we could probably use that right now. Unconditional love with discernment, right? With a little bit of discernment as well. But I think, you know, that's, you know, and I think you're both speaking to that. Some of the challenges that people are facing right now, some of the reasons that we have a lot of the mental health issues, of disconnect with community, the fear of other, the xenophobia, I don't have time for this, I'm not enough. Like all these elements are lacking in that unconditional love, the ability to be seen without having to, you know, feel like you're being judged, to be just seen and appreciated for who you are as an individual, which I think both of you are doing a great job out there to help these folks that have these big experiences be seen, you know, in a big way. You know, a lot of folks can't talk about their experiences, and now you're providing a platform for them to share their healing, and knowing that somebody else out there is going to watch that video and be like, wow, that could be me too. You know, so I really want to sort of, again, give you lots of congratulations and respect for all the work you're doing out there with Normalized Psychedelics, because that is sharing these stories for folks. And it's so important. We're still, you know, as much progress as we made in decrim side of things, like the destigmatization process is still so important, and we still got to keep doing that. And then the normalization process, as you're saying, you know, is still so important. So, you know, I think this is really, really critical what you're all doing. And again, just want to sort of give you thanks. And I know we have about a question or two that Rachel wants to jump on, and then we'll just sort of wrap up with some other ideas before that. And then really appreciating all your sharing so far. It's been quite a conversation. Have you, either of you, decided to interview yourselves for Normalized Psychedelics, by the way, or are those out there?
We'll do it soon. We'll do it in Denver this time when we meet up in June.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
I love that. Okay, so I just, great conversation. We have about 10 viewers across all the platforms. Just nice comments. Specific question wise, I just have one. I had a few, but I was like, I'm going to keep it to one to keep it succinct. But my main question is, through all your travels, visiting different communities and different, I like to think of the earth as a mirror or a way of mapping even our own bodies. So the stuff you were saying, Artem, about like your body, the cosmic body, how like we're all like cells of the grand cosmic. And so if you're a heart cell versus a liver cell, it doesn't really matter. You should just be embrace the cell that you are and like the full like uniqueness of what that is. And when people realize that meaning, then you're less likely to feel disconnected because you are part of something so wonderful. And so both of you really articulated a lot of that. I think a lot of people will get a lot of comfort and strength from this conversation. So thank you for that. But my main question is that in any of your travels, have you felt any almost feeling of familiarity? Like Oh, I've been here before, even though you hadn't been there before, in any kind of community or any kind of space, that kind of stuff, which kind of harkens, I guess, back to maybe like an ancient memory, let's say. So thoughts, Jamie, Artem, about if you visited a place or a community that felt like home, I guess, or like you've been there before, an echo.
I got a few. So yeah, I can take this in different directions, but upon starting this project, I decided to travel and live abroad in Mexico, which kind of was a calling to me. I was like, yeah, I love the States, but there's a lot of stuff I wanted to see. But this little small magical town that I'm living at in Mexico felt more like home than the place where I grew up in North Carolina, strangely. And I'm only gonna drop the name once because I don't want this place to change, so I keep it a little bit on a secret level. But Tepoztlan, Mexico. Shout out to Tepoztlan, Mexico. Strange place that always felt like home, even from the first couple of weeks spending time here. The other thing is ayahuasca. Like ayahuasca felt like some sort of ancient home. I always seem to connect to this home feeling that's inside of me, almost like a, it's like this familiarity, this warmness, but it's really hard to articulate. It's almost like a, I've been here before. I feel good here. I feel like I belong here. But I don't know exactly how to articulate it. It just feels homey. So that, that medicine in particular, ayahuasca, always felt, it feels like home. And it brings a lot of emotions, a lot of sad emotions, but like sad, happy emotions, crying. You're just like, when you're home, you just want to cry. So strange. People think that you only cry when you're sad, but I think you cry when you're happy too. So I would say for me, that's been one that has always just felt really welcome in my body.
Jamie, how about yourself?
As far as any of the places that we went to that felt like we've been there before, I didn't get any of that. But what I definitely did get is a deep feeling of family. Like just meeting these people after a few minutes, it's like you feel so close to them. You feel as close to family of as the as your own. That's definitely something that I did notice. And Artem and I did have conversations while we were on the road. Like, my God, these people, like the community, and then how warm and loving and genuine they are. That's definitely a sense that we got everywhere we went. Everywhere we went, and it's really beautiful because when I came back to my hometown Flagstaff. I got back here and I looked around and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna move to Port Townsend. I don't really want to be here anymore. Like, I want to be in my community. I want to be around family. And then after a few days, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna bring Port Townsend here. I want Flagstaff to be like Port Townsend. I want people to feel seen and safe and heard and loved and have these like beautiful communities surrounding these medicines. Like, so that's what I'm in the midst of trying to do is like bring Port Townsend here.
I love that. Like, home is where the heart is, and build it around that kind of situation. Oh, great story. So that was my question. Larry, back to you. Great conversation, guys.
Great. Thank you very much, Rachel. So you are now, how many interviews? Your goal was 1,000 interviews, right? So we're getting, how far along the way are we roundabouts now? Couple
We're probably at
hundred?
like at 70, 75 probably.
75. Okay. So anyone out there who wants to participate, give Artem and Jamie a call. Go to normalizepsychedelics.com, I believe, right? What other ways can they reach you out there?
I think the best way for them to reach us is on Instagram. They can follow us at normalize_psychedelics, or if they want to submit a story or check out our database, they can go to normalizepsychedelics.com. There's a little button there that says submit your story. So if you feel called to, we're definitely searching for the most diverse stories that we can find.
Great. Yeah, and if I'm sure there's also a donation button on one of those pages. So anyone out there that wants to help fund this amazing project so you can do more travels and meet more people, especially now get off the West Coast, maybe go to the East Coast or something like that. Love to see that happening. I know you guys are also heading into I guess it's still called the MAPS conference, but the 2025 Psychedelic Science Conference. You have any thoughts for anyone listening that can meet you up there? Is there you can have a table and all that, do some interviews around?
We're still trying to figure that one out.
Okay.
We definitely will be. We'll be at the conference. I thought it was called the MAPS conference, but maybe I'm outdated. So we'll be there. We'll be floating around. We're going to be participating in the Psychedelic Playhouse event, which is an after party there at the Plant Magic Cafe one of the days. And then yeah, we'll be floating around, and we'll have our cameras and stuff. So if you guys feel called to, and if there's a story that needs to be shared, like, reach out to us and we can chat about how to best tell your story.
And what's next, Jamie? What's next for the Vision and for you in general? And I know Flagstaff's a lot of action going on in Flagstaff to bring Port Townsend there, but what's next for you right now?
I think we're just focusing on education and advocacy right now. That's like the biggest things. Like if you can just reach the hearts of the people, that's going to be the fastest way to make change. And so we're really currently focusing on Normalized Psychedelics Project, trying to get more interviews. We're really focused on getting to the MAPS conference, to make connections and see how we can get these interviews out there to help save lives. And then, of course, always we're trying to get city council stuff moving in the state of Arizona and the city of Flagstaff. So that's kind of next steps here.
Great. How about you, Artem? What's next steps for you? What do you see on the horizon there?
Yeah, for this project, I think it's in some ways it's coming together and it's beautiful. I think it'd be really nice to, sometimes it feels like we're just talking to the psychedelic bubble, and we're just sharing these stories to the people who already know that they exist. So, I mean, I think what would be really powerful is if we can partner with psychedelic adjacent groups to help, put these into communities that need to hear them, whether it's the health space, the mental health space, people, publications based on mental other publications is what I'm trying to say. We would love to partner with psychedelic adjacent companies to help spread these stories in different ways. And because the population is huge, the psychedelic population is still, it's actually pretty small, but it's a really powerful bubble. So we like to think that whatever we're sharing and experiencing here, everyone's experiencing that. But the truth is that for most people, it's still not really an option. So, sharing these into platforms where we can reach more people is something that would be really meaningful. And I think, if people are out there that have publications that want to help us, we're open. We can chat.
And anything else that we didn't touch? I mean, we could go for another couple interviews. So maybe we'll invite you back on some great conversations that to come. But anything that we didn't touch on that you just want to sort of pop in here before we head out? And it sounds like Normalized Psychedelics is the way to contact you. Jamie, do you have a contact for anyone at Flagstaff that wants to reach out for Arizona? What's the best way for them to contact you for Decrim Nature stuff?
We have a Decriminalized Nature Arizona Facebook page and decriminalized.nature.flagstaff Facebook page as well. We also, I think, yeah, Instagram, decriminalized.nature.flagstaff, you can reach us there too. But I guess the thing that's really coming through is for those who are kind of wandering in the dark, those who are suffering, those who are suicidal, those feel like there's no way out. Like help is on the horizon. Like we're coming. The community's there. Just reach out. Don't give up hope. Be curious about psychedelics. Do the research. Reach out to your community. Like help is here. The support is here. And our biggest message here at Normalized Psychedelics is you are not alone. You are never, ever alone.
Awesome. What an incredible conversation. Thank you both. We got to touch on a little bit of what you're doing. We got to touch about, I love to talk about the weird and wild as well. So we got to touch about that as well. So thank you both, Jamie and Artem, for being here. Really appreciate your time, really appreciate your projects, and really appreciate what you're doing out there in the world. Just for a reminder for all the listeners, every 2 weeks we will be going live. So our next event, our next podcast is going to be Sunday, May 11th. Our special guest will be Savannah, who is actually in Homer, Alaska. So she's going to be hopefully the first city to pass in Alaska. We got some work to do out there, but she's going to come on, talk a little bit about parenting as well and everything like that. So it should be a great conversation. And then next week, Sunday, this podcast will be on all the regular platforms, Spotify and Apple Podcasts, et cetera. And Rachel will be putting that out. So keep an eye out for that. And we'll put some clips in the near future as well for our social media campaigns. So again, thank you both for being here. Thank you to the audience. Thank you, Rachel. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. Until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a great Sunday. Bye-bye now.
Plant power to the people. Plant power to the people. Where you dream is where I'll meet you.